because of the situation up here, would definitely err on the side of feeling more unsafe going in for a procedure.
From my perspective, I would just say, if the doctor thinks it's a good time to do it, I would just go ahead and do it. I wouldn't have very many concerns.
One of the things that drives me is I'm a data person. And right now, I feel a lack of data from a countrywide perspective.
These are actual comments from Patient and Family Advisory Council members, also known as PFACs. They participated in a recent joint Vizient SG2 webinar, and their comments show the range of attitudes patients and families have around resuming elective procedures. Some are too afraid to take the step. Others are willing to try. But over everything is a feeling of uncertainty. Hi, I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. And on this special episode of Modern Practice, we'll examine the role of patient and family attitudes will play in resuming elective procedures. My two guests are Kelly Goodson and Mark Larson. Kelly, tell us a little about yourself and your current role at Vizient.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me today. I'm a performance improvement director at Vizient, and I actually came into healthcare from the hospitality industry. So I have a laser focus on customer service. They really drill that into you when you work in the hospitality industry. So in 2011, when Vizient became a contractor to CMS, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, I really jumped at the chance to work on performance improvement projects that focused on engaging patients and their family caregivers. And I've been fortunate over the last 9 years to meet and work with patient and family advisors from across the country.
Thank you, Kelly, and we're certainly glad to have you here. Mark, please tell us a bit about yourself and your current role at SG2.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Hi, everyone. My role at SG2 right now is I'm a principal and focused in the strategy area. So what we do at SG2, which is a Vizient company, is that we focus on understanding the needs, the trends in the industry, and really help advise leaders of hospitals, health systems, and healthcare organizations across the country make decisions that are really relevant to what's coming up in the future.
Thanks for joining us, Mark. So recently, you both hosted a webinar mentioned earlier, and it covered how to connect with patients covering COVID-19. Now, we're going to build on that by looking more closely at the role of patient and family and looking into their perspective in resuming elective procedures. A similar SG2 podcast will do the same on SG2 Perspectives. So Kelly, first of all, explain to us what a PFAC is.
Sure. A PFAC, or Patient and Family Advisory Council, is a group of current or former patient and family members who meet on a regular basis with the hospital or clinic, leaders and staff, the same folks that are listening into this podcast, and they discuss operational issues that really impact the safety, quality, and patient experience. These folks are vetted. They've filled out an application. They've gone through interviews. They've been onboarded into the organization, very similar to what we do with our employees. If you look at a Patient and Family Advisory Council member's file, so to speak, it looks just like your employee file. So we know who these people are. And part of the onboarding process, they really learn the mission, vision, and values of the organization. So they really embrace and are passionate supporters of the organization. Now, I say that, but they're also very critical.
Right,
and we want them to be critical of us. And we want them to point out the things that we can improve upon. So, you know, internally at PFAC meetings, they bring that critical eye of the patient and family member. But externally, I've even heard them call themselves cheerleaders for the organization. They really bring the voice of your facility out into your community and talk about the hard work that you're doing to take care of them and keep them safe. The latest studies that I've looked at show that about 60% of hospitals across the United States have these patient and family advisory councils, or PFACs.
Huh. You want to save several thousand dollars worth of consulting fees, actually kind of bring up a PFAC.
Absolutely.
Mark, can you tell us a little bit more about the rationale behind the webinar you both hosted?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's so interesting when we learn more about some of the work that Vizient's doing with PFACs. it just really elevated the opportunity, if you will. With SG2 and the work that we've done over the last 5 years, we focused a lot on consumerism. Many of your hospitals and health systems have really embodied the whole need for integrating consumerism into your strategies and how do you actually deliver care at the hospital and health system level. So when I heard more about the opportunity to actually work with some of these PFACs and do this research, we really thought that it would bring visibility, if you will, into what's going on in the marketplace. What are consumers really thinking? What are patients really thinking about as they're needing to or anticipating interacting with the health system post-COVID? So this was a great opportunity to really enlighten the transparency to what the patients are thinking about and really help organizations not only just really develop strategies, that's certainly long-term, but right now, just thinking about how do they reopen their doors, redesign care, if you will, in the short term to make sure we're addressing these top concerns of patients and consumers as they come in and interact with the hospital and health systems.
Yeah, I can certainly see that since in many cases when we deal with many of our client or members, that the perspective of consumer trust or patient engagement is really not part or at least top of what they're thinking of. Who participated in the webinar?
So We had a panel that was actually is part of the discussion. So there were 12 PFAC members from across the country. And it was interesting. I mean, as diverse a markets from Boston, Massachusetts, all the way to Grove, Oklahoma, a smaller rural community in the eastern part of Oklahoma. So great diversity. And that really made the conversations very interesting as you're listening to some of the comments from that group. I think you can really hear the diversity of individuals and how they're thinking about COVID in their market. In some markets, COVID had really not been a major factor. But, you know, look at Boston market. They have seen a lot more COVID in that market. It's higher density market. Right. And really saw a bigger impact. So I think that's really important. And we certainly learned from those participants how diverse their opinions are, how much different they are on the risks of COVID, right, if you will. And then the other piece of the webinar was we also had attendees, over 40 PFACs from, again, across the country that were listening in and really learning from the insights that the panel delivered.
And Kelly, you actually conducted participant surveys during the webinar. What information were you looking for?
We were really looking for information about how safe that they would feel going in for an elective procedure. You know, as Mark said, our organizations out there are thinking about restarting these surgeries, reopening healthcare services, and Tom, you even pointed out thinking from the patient point of view about this really right. hasn't come up in our conversations with hospital leaders, you guys out there that are making these plans. So we were looking to get their patient point of view of these discussions and getting a feel for maybe what you can expect when you open your doors.
So a lot in reference to uncertainty in this time of what we like to refer to as the new normal. So let's listen in a few more PFAC members' comments from the webinar, and let's hear factors they consider when deciding about proceeding with an elective procedure.
I'm a retired hospital administrator, so I see things both from the patient perspective and the hospital perspective. And just take an example of two patients who I know right now who had their procedures delayed. One of them is in really good health. The other person, same age, is very immobile and a lot of pain. The person who is the most immobile but is in the most pain is the person who said, I want to have this. The other one said, I will defer it several months.
I'm in my 50s. I'm relatively healthy. So it would be nice to know that my doctor would say, hey, if you're interested, we're here, we're available. Then it's likely that I would go ahead and get it done.
I am in my 70s myself, and I have aging family members. Their concerns are mainly if the persons that are going to be in the surgical room were virus tested and free of virus symptoms, because the communication with your medical staff has been absolutely outstanding and you have lots of trust in your local hospital, then you feel real safe going in, but then you start thinking about the COVID. And so then it becomes a little bit more unsafe.
You know, for me, until there's a vaccine, I would like to continue to see different requirements for patients, actually, in terms of masks or hand sanitizer use. And the first thing I thought about was how nervous I would be to, like, step into the elevator and another patient coughs into the air.
When you have a procedure, you have to have somebody with you. And so if I'm asking them to come and drive me there, I want them to be safe, you know? I definitely want them to not feel like, oh no, I'm walking into COVID.
I was supposed to follow up my dermatologist back in March, but of course that had to be rescheduled, and it's rescheduled for the end of May. I do have some concerns because her office is connected to the hospital as opposed to a freestanding building. So I'm still a little up in the air.
It has a lot to do with the individual perception. This is a very high volume elective procedure, are these joint replacements. And patients are telling me, I would prefer to have it in a facility that is dedicated to that because A, they've probably been closed down if they're a specialty hospital. And I would prefer to go to a place that's a specialty hospital for my joint replacement because of that.
It's really important for the hospitals to kind of step back and tell the patient what processes they've put in place to make sure that the environment is made safer. Sometimes we can make a choice about coming in, sometimes you can't. And we have to verify that things are cleaner and safer.
So patients are going to judge from the minute they walk in the door, and everything has got to be lockstep in terms of, is what I'm being told, does that seem to match what I'm seeing and hearing? Because I have got to feel that my care is safe here, wherever I am.
Wow. From those comments, we can hear some key factors patients are considering, including the environment, their age, and their general health. Kelly, which patients will most likely seek care, and to the contrary, which won't?
Yes, as you could hear, we learned a lot from these patients and family members, these PFAC members. It really is all about their personal perspective of risk of getting COVID, you know, risk of their condition deteriorating, risk of that they're exposing their loved ones to. So we learned that you can't just lump people in by demographics, you know, age or diagnosis. It's really more about their risk tolerance. So coming out of this conversation, we really looked at those that will seek care into four waves, if you will. The first wave being those that are going to proceed really no matter what, because they're in pain or they're very concerned about their diagnosis. Maybe their activities of daily living are impaired, and they're going to be the first in the door. They're going to want the procedure, and they want to know that they're going to be safe, but they're going to trust you, they're going to go in. The second wave really does feel safe, as you've heard from some of the comments. They feel safe, and that's really because their perceived risk is low of getting COVID or infecting others, or the procedure that they need is a low-risk procedure with little follow-up, little interaction with the healthcare system, so you get your procedure and then you're done. Then there's this third wave. This is the wave that I think was the big aha in, you know, where we really need to work, where those that feel less safe, they really need to have a discussion with their doctor about their risks and benefits. And it really needs to be the doctor. And it might take multiple discussions to talk about the risks and benefits. They want details. They want to know how everything is being cleaned. They want data. They want to know who's been tested, as you heard from some of the comments, who have maybe had COVID. They want to know where the COVID patients are being treated, a lot of details and a lot of data. And they're going to take their time to decide. So really, this group needs to start being engaged now. As we take care of those first couple waves, we really need to start engaging this third wave if we want a steady stream. And then there's a fourth group that they're going to wait for a vaccine or a proven cure before they proceed. And they're going to wait for that. They might be immunocompromised. They might really have a high personal perceived risk of COVID and a bad outcome from COVID. And they're going to wait. I mean, they will wait a year or more until we have that vaccine or there's some sort of proven cure before they proceed.
If you kind of look at it, four waves. The first half will be those that actually need a procedure now, those that are actually relatively healthy and feel secure. But then the second half of those waves will be brought up where we're going to need more communication. And I think we'll get into that a little bit more. And then some that pretty much there's no way you're going to convince them until a vaccine is around. I get that. So Mark, where do personas factor in actually these decisions?
Thanks, Tom. The personas are being used by many of you out there in the marketplace today, where we see personas and think of personas as a lot of what Kelly said about the waves that are coming in and how people are making decisions differently. Personas are ways for the organization to do two things. First of all, message to consumers as they develop their outreach plan, whether that's general marketing efforts or even individual personal outreach by a provider or a member of their team. And then the second piece on personas is organizations like yourselves will often use them as a way to approach the consumer when they come into your clinical setting, whether that be the emergency department, whether it's for a procedure, or even into the physician office or clinic. For example, when Kelly and I really listened to all the conversations that occurred and kind of tried to characterize all these diverse individuals, we really came up with three different personas. One was the kind of the invincible consumer patient, if you will. We called him Bob, and he's typically healthy, not really loyal to any particular health system, but he's actually more concerned about his own family members that are at risk. He himself is willing to postpone surgery until the dust settles. He really wants to focus on health and wellness today, and he wants a provider and hospital to win his trust, if you will, really for either helping family members make decisions or for himself. The second persona we came up with was Mary, and she's much more cautious. She has a chronic condition and is really confident in managing her own conditions, but she's really going to value data that you're going to bring to her. So she wants to see the facts. She wants to know, do you currently have patients with COVID today? What's your response? How are you being safe? How are you testing? She wants those details. And she's also going to want proactive communication from a provider. And then that last persona, that's Jim. Jim's really fearful. Jim has a lot of chronic conditions. He's very vulnerable. He's a little bit older. And certainly his family is going to be really heavily involved in decision making. So he's going to require very proactive communication from his healthcare team, his primary care team, as well as if he does need a surgery, the surgeon and their care team as well. So again, messaging is going to be a little bit more personal for Jim and Mary to some degree, but also just thinking about these concerns, I think is really important as you think about how do we message. And then when that patient comes into the organization, they're going to be cautious. They're going to be a little scared. How can we build and keep that trust that we've spent so much time establishing?
So Kelly, what are some key takeaways that you learned from the webinar?
It's really imperative to engage patient and family advisors as we plan to reopen these services. You know, we cannot have the, if we build it, they will come attitude, because that's just not going to work in this environment. It's never really worked, to be honest, but we've gotten away with it in the past. But truly, during this time of pandemic and time of great uncertainty and concerns, it's just not going to work. And really, those organizations that have these patient and family advisory councils really have a competitive advantage. They can talk to these, you know, quote unquote consumers because they have them. They've been interacting with them for years. And so they really have partners at their side that can guide them and really help them with, you know, thinking about how we have procedures done now, where we have them done, what are the steps, what are the communication pieces that patients and families need to know. But one thing that came up in the conversation was they want someone there with them. And then these patient and family advisors really help you think creatively outside the box. And they'll tell you how they want to use telehealth and how maybe virtual visits could be used, or look, can't we use remote patient monitoring either pre or post procedure? So it's really just these rich, robust conversations that most of you out there, if you do not have a PFAC, you're just making guesses and you're kind of making assumptions. When you have these PFACs, you hear directly from your consumers and have more knowledge to proceed in a way that's going to be more successful and more sustainable.
I think what's different with COVID and what we've learned over even the last month and a half is that the patient is in charge. We have to recognize at this point that they're going to be in charge of their own livelihood, their own safety, their own concerns, their own family safety. Where we are today is really to be listening to the patient's needs and really understanding what those fears are.
I've quoted the book, The Speed of Trust, before on this podcast, but even more so when you're dealing with patients understanding safety or what they need, which is the three C's. It's character, consistency, and competency. And I think that that is actually more important now than ever when addressing patient trust, is having all three. So I appreciate that. Again, let's listen to a few more PFAC members' comments on factors they consider in making their decisions.
I have leukemia, so I have a marrow transplant. I still have a port that needs to be removed and replaced. And right now they're saying no, no, no way. And they're very data driven. So I would want to know basically how do we get to the yes.
I feel like I am more on the little less worried side, primarily because I am not in the high risk category. 31 years old, have always been in good health, have no underlying conditions. So for myself, I don't have much in the way of fear or uncertainty. With that being said, I wouldn't necessarily feel very comfortable with a family member for like my parents going in. Now they're in their 70s. My dad has underlying health conditions. I wouldn't like them telling me that they have an elective procedure coming up very soon.
So I have three conditions that I manage. I'm a severe chronic migraine patient. I have diagnosis for clinical depression, and I'm HIV positive. Everything to do with HIV, I haven't had to worry about because my HIV clinic is just seamless. Everything not having to do with that continues to be more and more fractured just because everything is more complicated because of what's happening in our country. There is this one medication that has gone up in the last 5 months from $5 to $45 to $80 to $118. And it actually flagged my insurance to give me in-home palliative care. But because palliative care is so completely overwhelmed right now, they told me that I would be getting it, but then there have been no calls.
I'm one who is in the high risk group. And so that tends to make me more concerned, probably a little bit more cautious. A proactive communication with me would be good. My doctor already knows I am a candidate for an elective procedure because I had been pre-virus, whether or not I was still willing to consider it and when I'd be willing to consider it. And then along with that, if the hospital could call, it could maybe reach out and say, these are the things that you have done to ensure that your procedure will be safe. Those things would be positive for me.
These comments are very humbling. You know, communication seems to be a key to these patients. Mark, how important is physician communication?
Wow, I think that's the million-dollar question, right? Today, we have providers that are very busy. They're really trying to focus on, you know, how to get their operations started up again if they're not addressing immediate COVID needs. And so I think from the learnings of the podcast, one of the things that you could really consider, first of all, is that messaging is probably, from a physician perspective, going to have to be correlated as much as possible to two factors that we know. How complex is the patient's health, and then the age of the patient, because those are the two main things that are going to be drivers of risk.
There has to be physician engagement, so activation of your providers are going to be important. That communication needs to be compassionate, and more important, it has to be consistent throughout all stakeholders. Kelly, Mark, thanks for this great information, and thanks to all of our patient and family advisors who contributed to this broadcast, and to our listeners. Please join us for other Modern Practice podcasts on the Vizient Medical Leadership Channel. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. Also, please listen and subscribe to the SG2 Perspective, the podcast on the latest in healthcare strategy. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks for listening.